So today I wanted to give a different meditation practice. And this meditation practice works more with awareness. The first practice we did was focused more on what's called mindfulness. And that practice we did with our eyes lowered, either opened or closed, paying attention to the breath, coming back constantly to the breath, and noticing thoughts but coming right back. Basically, to be in the present moment. So that was more a practice of mindfulness. So today, we're going to move into something that's more about awareness. And this is moving from more of a tight attention on the breath to more attention on space or environment. So our breath, we actually still pay attention or notice our breath, but we actually hold more loosely on the breath. In this practice, we look straight out. So we're raising the gaze. This is called raising the gaze. And instead of lowering our eyes down, we're looking straight out. And our senses are open. So you can see right away that there's more sense of what's going on in the environment. As soon as I said senses are open, I heard that humming, and I hadn't even noticed it up to this moment. So there's more of a sense of expansion into the environment. So these two, mindfulness and awareness, work together. And in this practice, we're bringing in awareness, but we're not particularly losing our mindfulness. And I'll continue to explain that. It's more like you could imagine being in an orchestra. And if you're playing an instrument, say a violin, you have to have a lot of mindfulness about how you hold the instrument and holding the bow. And you're noticing your own, you know, you have to pay attention to what you're doing, as well as having a sense of the conductor, the environment, the other people around you, all the other violinists in your little group. So that's more expansive, and that's awareness. So you're paying attention to your mindfulness of your instrument and the awareness of the environment. And there are so many other examples. You could think of just cooking, for instance. If you're chopping onions, you've got something already going on the stove, and you know your guests are going to be arriving in an hour and a half, you're aware of the environment, the time, what's on the stove, but if you're chopping onions, you still have to be very mindful of what you're doing and pay attention, or else you'd cut yourself. So this practice actually works with the union of the mindfulness and awareness. Another application of this technique, and in fact working with the closer placement technique as well, both of those can serve as antidotes for certain situations. So if you're using the technique with your eyes lowered and you start to feel sleepy or dull, maybe there's sort of a subtle low-level depression that arises. If you raise your gaze and have a sense of expansion into the environment, it counteracts that tendency to shut down because you're including a much wider range. In terms of having your eyes open and out in front of you, if your mind gets really wild and you get sort of drawn away by things in the environment, you can lower your gaze and come back to your mindfulness practice and come back to the focus on the breath. So it's possible to kind of modulate or work with your practice to counteract some of the things that come up as obstacles. And those are just two ways that are possible. So I think what would be good to do is we'll start first. We can start first with the shamatha technique and with a lowered gaze, just to feel our presence in the room, to feel our body here, to notice our breath, and to be aware of whatever's happening in our mind. So I'll ring the gong once and we'll begin the shamatha practice. And then at some point I'll go into the more explanation of the practice with the eyes raised. Now we'll go into the awareness practice. So slowly raise your gaze with eyes open. Look straight out. You can still be aware of your breath. A light touch on the breath. As the breath goes out, it fills the whole of space. You can have a sense of expanding into the space with your breath. And you can begin to sense the environment through your senses, hearing, seeing particularly, maybe touching. So whatever you notice, sound, anything, becomes part of your practice of awareness. You just become aware of it without judging it, or even, if you can, even without labeling it. So, for instance, sounds are not considered to be an interruption to your meditation practice, but it's all incorporated into your practice. So just be with whatever is occurring in your environment and continue to lightly be aware of your breath. If your mind wanders, come back to the space of awareness. if you have any questions about that or anything to share, we can.
Sometimes I just go to sleep. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't feel sleepy, but as soon as we started meditating, I don't know whether it's because it's after lunch or whether that's just my mind's way of trying to get away.
Does that happen if you practice in the morning?
No.
So, so it's important to note that because, you know, sometimes certain times of day are difficult to practice. I mean, we're all different. I find if I tried to practice before I went to bed, I would never sit. I just couldn't do it because I would be out instantly. So some people, it just, you know, sort of get sleepy after lunch. So I think the most important thing is to find the time of day that works for you. And then, you know, if you're in a situation like this and you're sleepy, then you might have to, maybe you fall asleep. That's okay, too. I can remember long ago when I used to go into Boston to meditate, and there's always someone sitting in front to lead the group, and I was brand new, and I'd sat there, and I watched this guy for half an hour, like, nodding out on the cushion. It was so painful to watch him. But he just sat there, and that was okay. So it's okay. You know, and again, you can try, actually, there are ways to work with sleepiness on the cushion. One is to go back to the posture of meditation and really feel your body on the cushion or the chair, go through the 6 points of posture, and go through the technique in your mind, and then really work closely with the technique so that you can... sharpen the technique, and sometimes that can cut it. And you just have to experiment, try different things.
I'm doing the Kelly Peters meditations on the second Thursday of every month, and last Thursday, and it goes back to what you were talking about. How do you know you fall asleep? Because I was sitting there, and she was talking us. She was taking us on a journey, and we were actually we went to the beach, and then we floated on the ocean, and I heard her speaking, and I visualized it, but my head just kept jerking down like that, which made me think I'd fallen asleep, but I still heard her speaking, and I still saw my journey, so I didn't know what was happening. So I don't know how. I think maybe sometimes I think I'm asleep, but I'm not. Or was I asleep? I just didn't know. And I had said something to Kelly, and she said, "Well, something similar to you. You know, that what you might want to do is just do a little check on yourself." Mm-hmm. So, but I thought it was a strange kind of experience. Mm-hmm. Because that idea of going to sleep happened like this, but everything else was working just fine. Mm-hmm. So maybe that you're sleeping, but you might still get the benefit of the
subconscious is still going.
Yeah.
Something happening.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be resistance too, like not really wanting to be present in the moment and kind of wanting to just go off. And sometimes if we're really working with the, like, not allowing ourselves to go off in thought, then sometimes we can find another pathway, which is just shut down. So the key is, like, not too tight, not too loose. So if you're too tight, sometimes that can cause the sleepiness too. And if you're too loose, you can just be kind of wandering all over creation for, you know, as long as you're sitting there. This example comes from the Buddha. He actually talked to one of his students who complained about his meditation practice, and he said, this person was a sitar player, and he said, when you tune your instrument, how do you tune it? You know? Oh, is it in here too? It's a very classic. Yeah, it's classic. Oh, right. He probably did. I've read it in many places. Yeah, so not too tight, not too loose. That's really good instruction. And also that you're your best meditation instructor because you know your mind. And you kind of want to be strict enough to be present, but not so strict that, you know, you're going to jump out of the pen, you know. So if it's too tight, it's very hard to, you know, you might want to jump.
I don't know if in your mind there's no way of changing that sound, but I'm going to go over and see it.
The humming.
I found myself getting immersed in the sound.
Uh-huh.
It's the same.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah, so it's just what it is, you know, and then you're just with the sound, and if you can incorporate things into your practice, then you don't always have to feel you have to have ideal conditions for everything to be right, but we're starting to train ourselves in accepting what's present and what's there, and that's very powerful too. So it was interesting, I was just staring at the blinds, and after a while, I noticed they were dancing, and I hadn't even noticed. You know, it's just they're moving in this little dance pattern, and it was really quite interesting. I would never have noticed it if I just sat here in class. And it's so you start to see and experience different things just by opening the space to allow it to be there. So
I actually
been
playing this. One time I was staring at the floor before starting the pattern created. So now there we started with the floor, and yeah, I guess I said parents and I say fine. Because the patterns don't run the design, they run different ways. They run this way and this way. So then we moved to the white, I moved my eyes to the white floor, and there was this explosion of yellow, just really huge, you know, like if you were to drop colored dye on a wet piece of paper with that kind of thing. And it stayed within the boundaries. But I would notice, being aware, so even if I stared there, I noticed there was a little here. But it really basically shot all the way across, and stayed within the boundaries, didn't go on the wall.
Uh-huh.
So I said, okay. So then, you know, I'm thinking, okay, I'm seeing after images, and one of the color things could happen. And so I did a little test, and I started, I know what I did. I said, I never got an email from Cindy. I wonder if she's okay. And all of a sudden, the yellow disappeared. So I thought it was just interesting. So then I went again with goodbye, and again, then the comet started coming up. So it's something I'm going to take note of and see how it mm-hmm. progresses.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it has something to do with meditation,
mm-hmm.
and not by odds.
Mm-hmm.
It was
interesting to note.
It was just a little interesting thing. Like you said, there are all these things I write down. I don't understand them, but I write them down because some days I'll understand them.
Yeah.
Yellow is associated with your solar plexus chakra.
I'm not sure which solar plexus it is, but you know that?
Oh, yeah, okay. And it's, that is your central spiritual energy center that controls, it's your power in your control chakra. I don't know all the ins and outs, but I know a little bit about it. Yeah.
All right. Mm. I know it's also a color of love.
See, love, Cindy.